It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll dive into the request to divert millions of gallons of water from Lake Michigan to the new Foxconn plant in Mount Pleasant. First, it's time for our weekly look at some of the biggest stories in national politics. President Trump is proposing that the U.S. military be deployed to guard the Mexican border. The first jail sentence has been handed down in the investigation into Russian campaign interference. And the head of the EPA is facing scrutiny over a series of alleged ethics violations. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the National Guard should be used to defend the southern border of the country? Is it necessary? As Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation moves on, where do you see it all ending up? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. Reed Wilson is a correspondent for The Hill. He's author of the new book, Epidemic, Ebola, and the Global Scramble to Prevent the Next Killer Outbreak. Reed, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start out with the president's suggestion to deploy the military to guard the U.S. border with Mexico. He's been talking about this, the White House firming up some plans apparently today. Here's a listen to what he had to say yesterday at the White House.
We have very bad laws for our border. And we are going to be doing some things. I've been speaking with General Mattis. We're going to be doing things militarily. Until we can have a wall and proper security, we're going to be guarding our border with the military. That's a big step. We really haven't done that before, or certainly not very much before.
And we're hearing in the news this afternoon, the president has asked border state governors to send National Guard troops to the border. What is the latest on that? What do we know about what is planned and what might actually happen, Reid?
So the Secretary of Homeland Security, Kirstjen Nielsen, just briefed the White House press corps on this plan to deploy National Guard troops. Important to note, by the way, there is a difference between, you know, sending military troops and sending National Guard troops. The National Guards are controlled by the states, not by the Pentagon, unless they're, you know, federalized in some kind of crisis or emergency. So he will need the cooperation of these border state governors. And three of the four border state governors are the governors of Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona are Republicans, and they're likely to go along with him in some respects. The fourth governor is the governor of California, Jerry Brown, with whom the president has been feuding on Twitter for weeks, and they have a personal animosity that goes back quite a while. So I don't expect a lot of California National Guard troops to show up at the border. But this is, you know, in some respects, a new focus on an old issue for President Trump. The immigration is what kicked off his campaign. It's what resonated with a lot of his core supporters, people who wanted something done about the border, the influx of undocumented immigrants across the border. And this is sort of a return to form in for somebody who has always seen this as a crucial connection between himself and his most core supporters.
This has been done before under George W. Bush, and President Obama had also sent National Guard troops to the southern border. Is there any sense that the White House is seeking something on a larger scale than past efforts?
Well, the Secretary of Homeland Security was asked about that just a few minutes ago at the podium. You know, George W. Bush sent about 6,000 troops. Barack Obama sent about 1,200, I think it was, at various points of crisis over the last few years. The secretary didn't say, it didn't give any specific numbers or any specific timeline, just that this ask had been made. You know, this is a president, though, who likes to do things, you know, bigger and grander than his predecessors. So I can imagine that it will certainly be more than the 1,200 troops that President Obama sent. You know, whether or not it's more than the 6,000 that George W. Bush sent, we'll see. You know, the funny thing about all this, though, is this is a moment when undocumented immigration across the border is falling, is at the one of its lowest ebbs in recent years. The lower, not quite as low as during the depths of the recession when we were actually losing illegal immigrants over the course of several years when essentially they couldn't find jobs here in the U.S. But it's still pretty low. Border apprehensions are up, but the crossings themselves are down, which tells me there are a lot of immigrants from southern and Central American countries who just aren't interested in coming. So this crisis that the president talks about is a little bit manufactured, but it's a crisis that his base, especially the Fox News watching base, really loves to hear about.
And the president has talked about in the absence of funding for the border wall he's been looking for, this is the step he wants to take in the interim, it sounds like.
Right, and he's talked about having the military build the wall. That's simply not going to happen. That's not something that the Pentagon has any jurisdiction over, or the president can direct with money that was allocated to the Defense Department rather than for building some kind of wall. So this is again, you know, some area of focus that he's able to speak to his core supporters at a time, you know, when he's coming off something of a loss on the border wall. When Congress passed the $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill a couple of weeks ago now, that bill did not include a lot of money for the wall. We heard some of the president's core supporters, like, you know, Laura Ingraham and people like that, talk about how the president had been rolled. And there is one thing that Donald Trump hates more than anything else, and that's the notion that somebody got a leg up on him in the negotiation. But that's, in fact, what happened, and now he is trying whatever he can to not only put the focus on the border, but also score some kind of political victory that will inspire his troops.
Looking at some of the top stories of the week in national politics with Reed Wilson, correspondent for The Hill, talking about this idea of deploying National Guard troops to the Mexican border now. I want to hear from a couple of you right now at 800-642-1234. We'll start with Yordis in Colfax. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think the biggest national security threat to the United States is Trump himself. What astonishes me the most about his presidency, among the many, many things that disturb me, is that he is profoundly lazy. This is he just shoots from the hip. He sounds to me often like a man that's drunk in a bar, just making up policy at, you know, 1 a.m. after he's completely loaded. And it's not based on a foundation of principle or ethics, or even advice of the great minds and experienced people in government. He throws out these things, and then everybody scrambles to try to fix or create policy around what he said. And this is chaotic, and it's very infantile. And I think it's making, as regards the border security with the military, he's trying to make an enemy out of one of our best friends.
Yordis, thanks for that call. I want to go right to another perspective on this with Kyle on the line in Dubuque. Kyle, hi.
Oh, thanks for letting me call in. Hey, I couldn't disagree with her more. I think Trump is the greatest. I think the military should be full on that border. I think California should be enforced. The more mad the liberals are, the more happy I am with Trump. I think he's doing an awesome job. And he is stirring up the base. And the rhetoric that he's talking, I do believe, has deterred people from coming in this country illegally. And if they think these people are so great, the very first thing they do is break our laws to come in our country illegally. It needs to stop. It should have stopped 40 years ago.
Kyle, thanks for the call. So two different perspectives there, Reed. First of all, our first caller saying it looks like this is chaotic policy, the president shooting from the hip, and then his staff scrambling to come up with a policy to back up the statements. What do you think about that?
Boy, you couldn't have picked two callers who had much more different opinions, right? Mm-hmm. But therein lies the conundrum with this president. I mean, he is somebody who changes, sort of spurs our basest instincts on both sides. You know, there are some people who just absolutely love him and can't get enough of him, and others who are driven to distraction by anything he says. So we're in a pretty remarkable moment here in American politics where not only do we have these incredibly strong feelings about our leaders, positive and negative, but we also have incredibly strong feelings about ourselves and each other. You know, the number of people, of Americans, who see the members of the other party deeply unfavorably is up at about, you know, 60% of Democrats and 60% of Republicans. What that tells me is, you know, there are 6 in 10 D's and R's who think that the other side isn't just wrong, but also actually, like, bad for America. That's a really dangerous place for us to be, but that's where we are right now.
And then to some of the specific points they made, Kyle mentioning that the president's words, even before it becomes policy, his words may be deterring people from trying to cross the border. Do you think there's anything to that?
Yeah, I think that's a significant point. And I think there are a lot of people who have decided not to cross because – of this crackdown on illegal immigration. There are a couple of things that influence the decision to come across the border illegally or not. One of them is economics. We saw that during the recession when the number of undocumented immigrants in the U.S. actually dropped significantly over the course of a few years. And another is the sort of rhetoric that the president has offered. Now, that can be a positive and a negative. Sure, it stops people from coming across the border, but does it also risk demonizing people who are actually here already? And that's a question that I don't think we're gonna know for a while, although it is certainly something that could harm Republicans at the ballot box.
Talking to Reed Wilson, correspondent at The Hill, looking at some of the week's top news in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We're going to move on to some other issues. The latest in the Mueller probe, saying the president isn't the subject of criminal investigation right now, figuring out what that means. The first jail sentence for somebody involved in that investigation, and criticism of EPA Chief Scott Pruitt over possible ethics issues. Call in at 800-642-1234 with your thought on those issues. That's 800-642-1234. More coming up here on Central Time. We continue our conversation with Reed Wilson, correspondent at The Hill, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Reed, let's turn to the Mueller probe now. Couple stories there. The first, jail sentence. Alex Vanderswaan, kind of an obscure figure in this whole story. A month, it sounds like, in prison for him. What do we know about this case?
So this is, he's a Dutch lawyer who was an associate of Richard Gates and Paul Manafort, the two guys who were in the two senior Trump administration campaign officials who had been indicted earlier. He lied to FBI agents last fall about his contacts with Rick Gates. He was apparently worried that he'd be fired from his law firm, Skadden Arps. Along with a month in prison, he got a $20,000 fine, 2 months probation. There's a sense among some people that he may have pleaded guilty and tried to get a sentence relatively quickly because apparently his wife is pregnant and he wants to be obviously out of prison once his kid is born. But this is a minor fish. But it sends a message to the rest of the people involved in who may have talked to Robert Mueller or any of his investigators, which is, if you lie to us, we will come after you. That's a very clear message to send with a conviction for somebody like this. So, if they don't want to go to jail, don't lie to the special counsel.
And then the Washington Post reported yesterday that Robert Mueller told Trump's lawyers, President Trump's lawyers last month, that the president himself is a subject of the investigation, but not a criminal target. And I've seen people read this in all manner of different ways. Reed, what, if anything, do we know about what that means?
Yeah, boy, you watch MSNBC and Fox News, and that sentence means two entirely different things, right? What we know is that there is no defense attorney in the world who wants their client to be the subject of a probe. Then again, of course, they'd take subject over target any day of the week. But this is part of Robert Mueller's effort to get the president to sit down and answer questions under oath. Is Robert Mueller's hope? And then again, that may not actually matter. It's still a crime to lie to the FBI, even if you're not under oath. But this is a part of his effort to get the president to sit down for an interview. So while he may not be a target right now, he is certainly a subject of the probe. And, that can't make anybody who knows anything about the law feel any good about where Robert Mueller's going. I think it's pretty clear, though, that, the lawyers for the president who told him that this thing would be wrapped up, by last Thanksgiving or by the end of the year or within another couple of months, that's not the case. And this is an investigation that's going to drag out for quite a long time. It looks like Robert Mueller has, tentacles going into several different directions and maybe even into the president's finances itself. So this thing is not going away anytime soon. And by the way, there was an important caveat to that, the fact that the president is not the target but his subject. He's not a target yet. That's the important thing that I think a lot of people are worried about on the president's legal team.
Another legal concern at the White House, scrutiny on Scott Pruitt, head of the Environmental Protection Agency, for possible ethics violations. Can you round up a few of the things that the concerns that people are raising there?
Right. So we remember that Scott Pruitt, who was the Attorney General of Oklahoma, before he became the EPA administrator, got in trouble a couple of months ago for all these first-class flights he was taking. His people said that it was for security. Some people cast doubt on that. Apparently, he also took his security detail with him on a trip. Apparently, he likes them a lot. However, the latest that's gotten him in some hot water is the fact that he has he's done two things, really. First of all, he lived in a townhouse or an apartment up on Capitol Hill just a couple of blocks away from the Capitol building. I walk by it every now and then. It's a beautiful building. And he was paying about $50 of rent per night while he was there, and only on the nights when he was actually there, sort of like an exclusive Airbnb, if you will, that the taxpayers were footing the bill for, or the taxpayers weren't footing the bill. He was having to pay for it. But hey, only $50 a night in prime location up on Capitol Hill. That looks like a series of favors that he's been done by the people who own this building, who, by the way, happen to be lobbyists here in D.C., one of whom at least used to, it's not clear if he does anymore, lobby on behalf of clients who had business before the EPA. So that looks a little sketchy. The other part is he went around the White House to give two of his aides significant raises under the small and sort of obscure provision within the EPA. And by the way, these aides were folks who came with him from Oklahoma, and they are now making significantly more than their predecessors in either the Obama administration or the Bush administration made. He gave those raises even after the White House declined to sign off on them. The White House usually has to sign off on raises given to political appointees. And so now Scott Pruitt's in the hot seat. You know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the White House press secretary, was just asked to defend him, and she said effectively, "We're still looking into it," which is not exactly a vote of confidence that any administration official wants to hear. The good news is that President Trump and Chief of Staff John Kelly called Pruitt to offer their sort of reassurance in the last few days. The bad news is that tends to be what happens right before somebody gets fired in the Trump administration.
Right. The president was asked about this in sort of a free-ranging back and forth with the press, and he said something like, "I hope he does great," was his statement about Scott Pruitt.
Yep. And that, by the way, let's also say the Pruitt has this very convenient off-ramp if he wants it. But the time is ticking. There is an open race for governor in Oklahoma, back where Pruitt is from. The filing deadline is next Friday, April 13th. So if he quits before April 13th, he can credibly say, I'm quitting now to run for governor of Oklahoma, rather than I'm quitting because I got a sweetheart deal from a bunch of lobbyists after taking a bunch of first-class flights and giving my friends big raises.
Talking to Reed Wilson, correspondent for The Hill, about some of the top news in national politics. President Trump criticizing the company Amazon this week, tweeting a lot about the effect he says the company's having on the U.S. Postal Service. Here's a bit of what he had to say yesterday.
The post office is losing billions of dollars, and the taxpayers are paying for that money because it delivers packages for Amazon at a very below cost. And that's not fair to the United States. It's not fair to our taxpayers. And Amazon has the money to pay the fair rate at the post office, which would be much more than they're paying right now.
We've seen fact-checking on this. What are people saying about this claim of a post office ripoff here?
There are so many things wrong with that clip that you just played. We'd be here for the rest of the afternoon if I went through all of it. The fact is the post office is losing billions of dollars. However, that is a decades-long problem that involves pension costs and the fact that we use this crazy newfangled thing called email instead of sending each other letters these days. Amazon is so good for the USPS's business that there are now areas, including my hometown here in D.C., where the post office effectively runs on Sunday running deliveries for Amazon because it makes them more money. So, in fact, the post office is doing badly. It's doing less badly because Amazon is around. This is a remarkable moment by a president. I can't recall another American president attacking an American business so audibly. Of course, Jeff Bezos, the guy who owns, or the CEO of Amazon, owns the Washington Post, which has been reporting quite critically on President Trump for the last, since he got into electoral politics. Bezos, by the way, I'd also say, Bezos is the richest man in the world, and President Trump really hates it when anybody's richer than he is.
Want to touch on a couple of stories quickly, Reed. First of all, as I look at national news, I keep seeing Wisconsin in it with our Supreme Court race. Are people in D.C. watching what just happened here?
I was up late last night watching the results come in. And, you know, the thing that always strikes me, first of all, $4.5 million for a state Supreme Court race, and that was, by the way, just the money spent on television, is a remarkable amount of money spent by both the liberal and the conservative outside groups. You know, we've seen that kind of spending ramp up, especially over the last decade in Wisconsin. I got to imagine you guys are pretty tired of watching all these political ads on TV.
It's a big boost to our state economy, is all I know. And then I want to turn to a state story, not a Wisconsin state story, that you wrote about. Reed, thought this one was interesting. Rhode Island, the state or commonwealth? Is that a commonwealth? I don't know. Rhode Island, whatever
it
is.
Yeah.
They are offering, or there's a proposal, I should say, to offer money to people to move there for a year. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this is my favorite part of writing on the state beat, is all these sort of crazy proposals that come up. You know, every 10 years, the U.S. conducts the census, and based on those population numbers, we reapportion the number of congressional seats around the country. Well, Rhode Island's population has been growing so slowly that they're now at risk of losing their second seat in the U.S. House of Representatives for the first time since 1789. They are right on the threshold, you know, based on just how the next few years go in terms of who moves there. They could lose the seat or they could just barely save it. So there is a state representative in Rhode Island who has proposed giving families of three or more up to $10,000 in monthly chunks, monthly installments, to move to Rhode Island so that they could be counted during the census. Now, let me be very clear, this is never going to happen, but I thought it was a pretty creative way to try to stave off what is inevitably going to be a state losing a congressional seat.
So people will be watching for a sign from Providence to see if they should move to Rhode Island. Reed, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, you're pretty good at that wordplay. I like it. Thanks, Rob.
That's what they pay me for. Well, they actually try to make me not do it. That was Reed Wilson, correspondent for The Hill and author of the new book, Epidemic, Ebola, and the Global Scramble to Prevent the Next Killer Outbreak. Should talk to him about that sometime. But he was with us today for our weekly look at the latest news in national politics.